So there's a couple of things I'm going to talk about. The primary focus will be cloud stuff, but I'll give you an intro of who I am and kind of the stuff that I do. Before I do any of that, does anyone want to kind of, I need three people to pick a number between 1 and 50. So can I have three volunteers? We've got 42.
12.
12 and?
31.
31. So 42 is probably the closest to 38. So you've won a cardboard virtual reality headset that my company designs, and if you come and speak to me afterwards, I will tell you about it. It is. Ah, you can have two. So yes, I'm designing a 15 quid virtual reality headset that's got the lens quality of an Oculus DK2, and they're £15, and they're on Kickstarter right now if you want to get one. But that's not what my talk's about. So just get my plug in. So my name's Lewis Dean. I run a software and games company called Gateway Interactive. And one of the things that we've been doing over the last couple of years is building games, and this is one of them. It's called Spectra, and it's coming out on Xbox One very soon. I should play the trailer so you get an idea of what it's about. If it plays. So the basic idea behind that game is we've got a load of music that we've had a rather renowned music producer produce for us, and we have an algorithm that scans the music and then generates racing levels based on the intensity of the beat in the music. So the crazier the music gets, the more intense and difficult the game gets. But you know, I always talk about this game because it's actually through knowingly that we've taken this all over the world with Xbox, and we've been a console company, and we're also looking at bringing this out on tablets and mobiles. And in doing that, in having the game that shipped on all those different platforms at once, we had a unique number of challenges because we wanted that unified gaming experience. We wanted to have a single kind of user state that was shared seamlessly between platforms. And that's relevant for that game and a game that we put out on Windows Store in September last year called Pure Space, which is a tactical simulator game. So in the same way, we want kind of the users to not have any kind of feeling of boundary when they transition from one system to another. So the classic example when I talk about that is, let's say it's the 14-year-old kid who's in the living room playing on the Xbox. The parents come in and say, right, this is my living room, not yours. Go and play your games in your room. They can pause the game in that state, go upstairs and immediately unpause the game in that state without having to log in, sign in, or sync accounts, or download save games or anything. It should just be where they left it. And both Pure Space and Spectra support that. The way that we attacked that problem was we had a little architectural think about why don't we try and build a platform that does it rather than just make it a bespoke feature of these games. Because actually, who here knows how to read and write to a file at the same time in the C Windows API? Excellent. So the point about that is, so how many of you actually make games? So that's a lot more hands than the people who know how to write two files at the same time in the C API. So I mean, a file, read and write from a file at the same time. And the point about that is, although for a lot of applications in games, when you're building game engines and building graphics software, knowing things like how to read and write to a file at the same time is important, a lot of the time you don't care, because the users don't care. It's not going to improve the experience of your users. And in our opinion, it shouldn't be what your business is focused on. So the idea with Nomad is that we're looking to change the services landscape for games companies. We think that there's something wrong. So for anybody who's trying to sell this to a producer, or if anybody's worked with publishers or producers, I've, I always put my little definition of what the cloud is. I know this is a cloud game today, so you've probably heard this 1,000 times. It's like turning on a light bulb. So that's the advantage of using cloud software over in-premise IT. So if you look at this system, here is a system for delivering electricity to a house. When you, as the user of electricity, require electricity services in your home, you don't go and build this system for yourself, you rent it at the point of consumption. And that's the same as a cloud system. And you get all these advantages, and I'm not going to go into them because loads of people are talking about it already. So when companies say, right, I'm going to build a flexible cloud services architecture to support my game, this is generally what they do. They build this kind of connected web of little service nodes. So you might have storage nodes on the left. You've then got some kind of storage architecture, and then you've got the business logic of your application, something that's handling your client transport, and then something that's delivering that service to your clients. And in that way, you build them in separate tiers like this so you can scale them. But the problem for us, we think that actually that doesn't matter. All of this is just expensive. And if you're a startup company, it's expense you don't want to afford. You know, you're not selling your database architecture services to your clients, you're selling them games. And that's what we think is wrong. What if all of this could be reduced with a system to this? Because that's the bit that's really important. That's the bit that's going to be turning over you more revenue. That's the thing that's going to affect your user's experience. It's the thing that your engineers should be spending their time worrying about. Engineers are expensive. They should be building business logic for your application, not doing anything else. So we built an engine to do this with. We built an engine that takes a C-sharp program model, and this program model is written in the language of your application. If you're a games company, that might be ships, weapons, guns. If you're a music company, that might be songs, users. If you're a banking company, that'd be accounts, account balances. We run it through a form of compiler, which pulls that application apart. And from that, we're able to do something that we call service provisioning. And service provisioning allows us to automatically build database architectures, transport architectures, service endpoints for that software. And then the really cool bit is that you can then, from that syntax tree, reassemble an androgynous proxy assembly. And an androgynous proxy assembly is an assembly that looks like the original one that you wrote, but it's available in a number of different languages. And this is really important for people building native applications. If you're building native applications, you might want your client assembly in C, you might want it in Objective-C, you might want it in C#, you might want it in C++. And because we have this kind of inverse compiler system, we're actually able to then transmute your original program model into those languages very easily. So you'll end up with 4 or 5 different clients that are written in different languages, but they're all based on one common model. And that makes maintenance a lot easier, because all of a sudden, if you update your model, all the clients are automatically regenerated automatically. You just roll them out in your next patch. Automating all this stuff just saves loads of time. And actually, that's the reason why we are able to do this so easily in our games, is now that this system is built, our games are built from the ground up to have cloud sync, cloud interaction, and actually cloud compute involved in the process as well. Walking around the office, go, this is really cool, what should we call it? And we actually thought, you know, architecture as a service. So you've got the idea of you're the client, you know what you want. So why are you doing all this service architecture? So that, it obviously abbreviates to ASS, and then this happened. And that box with the exclamation marks on wasn't there on the program when I ran it. So we're coming up with a new name for this, because when you give software engineers the word ASS, they tend to get creative. But here's a little bit of code. So I'm actually going to show you how it works when you're using it. So we have two things that we think are really cool. One thing that's really cool is if you look at this code, there's some operational code, so there's some methods at the bottom as well. So it does stuff as well as just being data, even though you just see data here. If you look at this code, there's nothing in here that's talking about networks, sockets, databases, connections, proxies, clients, authentication, credentials, nothing. This is talking in the language that you, as a game developer, care about. This is a game about spaceships. I'm going to have a spaceship class. It's going to have guns and weapons and shields. And you can do all sorts of object-oriented stuff. They can use inheritance composition. All works as normal as if you were writing this as an application on your local machine. We do inline service configuration, so you're not digging through web portals to configure things that you should only be configuring once. You know, there are web portals for stuff that web portals are for, managing users, managing authentication permissions, but for stuff like description of services, we do that inline in the code, so that's pulled out at compile time. And here's some client code. So this is actually Unity that's got the client DLL loaded into it, and this is us using the cloud in Unity inline with the code. And we think that's really important, because if you look at this, there's no networking here, there's no services, there's no databases, there's no crap that's going to waste time when you should be making your game convert users to pay money faster. Because that's all you care about. So What we've done is we're reducing the barriers to entry for people who are building cloud services-oriented games. Games as a service can now be built by a 12-year-old in his bedroom. And using this kind of system, his game can then scale through the power of Windows Azure to support millions of users, as long as he can keep afford to paying the bill. He doesn't need to then hire a team of 300 database architects to support that. And that's great, because it works. And it works because the games that we've shipped and currently support tens of thousands of users use this system, and it works in practice. So that's kind of that's what we do. So in February, we're going to be releasing Pure Space on Xbox One. Sorry, that's Spectra on Xbox One, not Pure Space. So Spectra comes out on Xbox One in February, and it's going to be our kind of largest stress test of this system, and we'll see what happens. But what's really interesting kind of with this context is that on April the 15th, we're actually going to be releasing our CTP release of Nomad. So we're going to be allowing developers to get into the system, pulling it apart, and you know begin building it with their own games. And I'm really excited to see people build stuff that's really unusual that maybe we haven't thought about yet. So that's the end of my formal presentation. If anyone would like to ask me any questions, please go ahead.
That was fast.
Yeah, they're usually quite fast. I speak fast.
Would it include support?
Not sure.
Will it include support for the Xbox then?
Yes,
CTP?
It does.
So it's a bit of a pain writing in C++ on Xbox.
Yes, absolutely, and it's horrible. Yeah. So yeah, because we're building an Xbox game, we've not only got an Xbox plugin available, but we also handle all of the security certificate stuff that working with Xbox Live and consoles requires as well. There's some interesting things that are still a bit hairy to do with migrating accounts between devices that are not in the Xbox Live family. So games that are Xbox Live enabled over the Windows network can interrupt quite easily with the Xbox version. Getting games on iOS and Android to speak to the Xbox version in the same way without being a licensed Xbox developer is quite difficult. So we're looking for interesting ways to see if we can solve that on the service side, but usually as a client, you'd usually require an Xbox developer permit.
Excuse me. What sort of costings are you thinking about?
So this is going to be deployed as a service. We're going to have a free tier, which is up to 10,000 users, and then there'll be a fraction of a penny per user as in line with the rest of the competition. Another? And the great thing about this is because that data is actually the data that you create in your model code is persisted in databases, there's no reason why you couldn't pull that database into a machine learning algorithm and pull business intelligence from your games as well. And because you've been building with that from the ground up without realizing, you've got all those other options available should your game go viral or have a larger turnover.
Great stuff. Okay. Can you tell me a little bit more about the technology behind how you analyze the C# code and then transform it into these different languages?
Yes. So it's essentially a compiler. So this is what a compiler does when you build native code on your local machine. It takes a language that's in a certain format, it pulls it apart into an abstract description, uses that description to generate dependency diagrams for that code, and then it reassembles it into something else. So that's a three-stage process, I think. And we essentially do the same, except instead of building an assembly of another program, we build a proxy assembly for that program, and we use the intelligence we gain from the disassembly sequence to build a database.
Cool, thanks.
Any other questions?
Any more? Cool.